Despite what the title of this franchise would suggest, this show is not, in fact, about a dragon nursery. Join us in a discussion about MLM victories, WLW failures, and straight couple intricacies as we talk about the new Netflix show, Dragon Age Absolution, a tale of betrayals, love, and Ashley Burch playing the best character yet again.
Welcome to In Media Less, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we will be discussing the 2022 animated series on Netflix, Dragon Age Absolution. This series was created by, who was it created by, Val? Since we decided you're going to do the names.
I'm going to do the names now?
You're going to do the names now.
Oh, that would have been very helpful for me to know before we started recording.
I can't say them, and you made fun of me last time, so.
I did. All right, so this is just me killing time because I'm opening the right page.
Yeah. Stop browsing Tumblr and start browsing the Dragon Age Absolution IMDb page.
That is where I'm at. All right, so it is. There are two writing credits.
Oh, but who created it? Start with that.
I don't know. Is it the producer? Is it the director?
I'm on the Wikipedia. It's got a creator.
It does? Yes. Well, okay. Well, I'm on IMDb. Okay. So
let me check. Let me get the IMDb page open.
The
IMDb page. Because I'm curious to see who it lists here.
I just woke up from a nap, Chloe, okay. And you're making me do so much work.
Okay, take it away.
Okay, so the series is created by, is it Margreed Scott?
Margreed, yeah, is what I would say.
I think Margreed Scott. It's pretty good. I liked it.
Oh, come on. You can't just stop there.
Okay.
Who are the other names? Say all the names.
All right, all right, all right. Let's do this.
I say all the names.
So it was directed by Bae Ki-young and... I thought there were two directors, but Wikipedia is only showing one.
It was Margaret and Bay.
Okay. Then I'll just move on to the voices.
Yes.
Going back a page. This is a mess. How do you do this, Chloe? It stars Matt Mercer, Ashley Burch, Kimberly Brooks, Sumali Montano, Josh Keaton, Phil Lamar, Keston John, Zara Fazal, who's a beast, and Miranda Rayson. Did I get everyone?
Yes, more or less. I mean, there were a few guest stars, but that's the important cast. So
I did it. Look.
You did it.
And it was awful.
I mean, welcome to my world. I'm trying to think where to start with this. I guess start with the summary. So this is set after the events of Dragon Age Inquisition. So I'm going to start by asking you that, Val. Have you played Dragon Age Inquisition?
No.
Have you played Dragon Age 2?
No.
Have you played Dragon Age Awakening?
No.
Have you played any Dragon Age?
I've played Origins, the beginning.
Okay.
I got to some mission, and by the time I reached the end of it, all of my saves were for that location.
Yeah.
And there was a glitch at the end, and I could not complete it. And because of that, I couldn't progress in a game, and then I just gave up.
The first game is famously glitchy. It came out, I think, in like 2009. And it was just kind of a mess. So I'm not surprised to hear that. Were you enjoying, like, how far in were you?
Pretty early, I would say. I mean, obviously got past the blood trial and then, like, gathered the crew.
So you were a mage.
Only mages do it? No, I thought
you meant the trial that the mages go through. No, you mean
I don't know. No, I think I was a fighting boy warden.
Yeah,
there you go, that one.
Do you remember what race you were? Were you an elf, human, dwarf?
I was either an elf or a human.
Okay.
I think I started the first playthrough as an elf.
Okay.
And then I got to that mission, it bugged out, so I restarted the game as a human, got to that mission, it bugged out, and then I stopped.
Okay.
I don't remember what mission it was.
Okay, so... For people who have not played any of the Dragon Ages, and for you, since you probably...
You're just raising dragons the whole time.
Yes, this is about dragons and the ages that they go through, and it's definitely not about anything very gritty or sad. So the context of why BioWare made this universe was because they had made like Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights and all those like famous computer role-playing games. And then they didn't have the rights to the Dungeons and Dragons universe anymore. They didn't have the rights to Faerun, you know, the premier setting, Forgotten Realms. Whether that was by choice or by just, you know, losing the rights, who knows? I don't remember the details, but like they needed to create their own fantasy world. And they wanted to create one that was a little more, I guess, gritty, a little more separated from also a lot of the fantasy tropes that have gone on since like Tolkien and like that are present in Forgotten Realms of like the elves are these beautiful, untouchable people and the orcs are these awful savages. And just they wanted to get away from all that baggage that's awful. And so that's why they kind of created the world of Dragon Age. It's a world where a lot of the things that we take as like fantasy tropes have been turned upside down. Elves exist in kind of they used to be slaves, and even now they are in a very low position in society. You know, some of them
live, there's a lot of racism here.
There's a lot of racism. A lot of them live kind of like Roma people by kind of traveling in small tight-knit communities. Others are just like in kind of the underclass of society. Dwarves are kind of like classic dwarves, actually. They're probably the most tied in with like the kind of Tolkien view of what a dwarf is. There's no orcs. There are the Qunari, who it's unclear. They're kind of their own thing. Kind of, you would compare them to tieflings, perhaps.
Perhaps.
And then humans. And it's a very political, it's based off,
they're like tiefling Goliaths.
Yes. They're like, they're big boys. Big boy tieflings. Big boys and girls. And
there's non-binary. Also a truck that's just outside my room the entire 10 minutes we've been recording.
Okay, that's part of Dragon Age. You just didn't get far enough. There was the truck that was just always in the background.
And it stays favorite. There the entire time.
Okay. Yeah. And if that was why the game crashed, why you couldn't progress, because you didn't unlock the truck. So I love the Dragon Age series. It's not quite up there with Mass Effect for me, I think, because it doesn't quite have the tight arc that is the Mass Effect trilogy. Like, each Dragon Age game is kind of its own story.
Yeah, it's separate, right? And all the characters kind of have, like, from what I understand, little influence on the other games, but they still do. It's like a world-building progression, but not necessarily a plot-driven one.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it, because a lot of the characters from Dragon Age, it's interesting because Dragon Age Origins is really not all that important by comparison compared to Dragon Age 2, which is really important for Inquisition. Like, pretty much everything that happens in Inquisition happens as a result of the events of Dragon Age 2, but kind of all the characters and stuff are very interchangeable in a way they weren't in Mass Effect. So it is, as you said, very world-building focused rather than kind of personally focused in terms of how they connect with each other. I won't go into too much detail about the stories of these games, although I want to, but that's a separate episode.
And maybe one day I will play them.
And or we can do an episode where I just like tell you about them like we've done with other stuff.
Chloe has no hope of me playing.
It's like,
she's like, you're not.
It's like 300 hours of gameplay, dude. It is not a small commitment.
I can focus.
I don't doubt it. It's just, it's a lot.
I do.
I know. You've gone through Mass Effect. It's similar length. Like it's very similar. Yeah,
but sure did.
I mean, I've gone through Mass Effect like 4 times, but who's counting?
I think your brother went through it like 800.
He's obsessed. He loves a good comfort media. He finds something that he likes and he just plays it and plays it and plays it.
Did he finish replaying it right now? Because I know he was on the third one last week.
I don't know. Anyway, we're not here to talk about my brother, though.
Why not?
Anyway, so that is all to say. I just wanted to say that I love these games. I'm coming from it on the perspective of a very, very passionate fan who owns like the comic collection and I've got the, like, World of Thetis art book somewhere on my shelf. Like, big fan. Valve's not quite there yet, hopefully. You know, they're coming up with the fourth game, hopefully, this year or next year. Maybe that will get her hooked. So, that is all to say. Mm-hmm. Do you want to summarize the plot? Because I've been talking for a while.
Well, actually, I was going to look up how many hours I played, but my brother locked me out of Steam on my computer.
Oh, fun.
So that's very fun. But I definitely have maybe like 20 hours on it. It wasn't like a short playthrough that I've done. I've gotten pretty far in it.
It's a pretty long game, this. That's probably only like the first fourth of the game. No, I've
almost finished the beginning, what I'm saying. Yeah. But it wasn't like I played for 3 hours and then gave up.
Okay.
It did hook me very quickly.
It was just the save issue.
It was the save issue. I didn't learn the first time, made the same mistake the second time I played through it. But, like, I never play games a second time. Like, that's unheard of. So the fact that I actually wanted to do it this time and, like, stuck with it until it glitched out again, like, it says a lot, actually.
Yeah.
It was very, very fun.
That's funny that you say it, because I don't find Origins to be particularly fun. I think it's kind of very old feeling, but anyways, summary.
Interesting.
No, I just think it reminds me the most of Baldur's Gate. Did you play either Baldur's Gate? Okay, so like a lot of the combat is very much just like
your new game.
Not three. One or two.
I didn't.
I have not played three. So
three feels like it. Sorry, I keep interrupting you.
So like,
am I doing the plot?
No, real quick, because we got on this, because I can't keep my mouth shut. One and two of Baldur's Gate, it, like, combat is very much like you give your units orders, and then there's just this big mess of battle, and then you win or you lose, or maybe you press pause and cast a few spells, but it's not very, like, action combat, it's very, like, D&D, like, I pick what I'm going to do, and then there's some die roll behind the screen to tell me if it works or not. And that's what Origins feels like, whereas 2 and Inquisition, I think, get rid of that system, and there's much more focus on smaller party with more action, and if your character physically hits the target, like you see them hit, then they hit. Like, there's no die roll. I mean, there's die rolls probably happening for damage, but not for, like, to hit, and it makes it feel more responsive.
So it's probably... I just started playing Pathfinder.
Yes.
So it has a similar vibe to that and not so much to Inquisition or the second one. All right, yeah.
Okay. Plot summary.
So speaking of.
Go.
Basically, there's this gay elf, Miriam, and that's why we're talking about it.
Yes. Okay. This is established in like episode one. Like it's very.
Yeah, like this quickly. Is the first thing that happens.
Yes. She's in love with Hera, a former member of the Inquisition, and a mage.
And basically, her ex and her ex's fighting buddy finds Miriam and her friend. It was Roland, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So finds Miriam and Roland, and they offer them an opportunity to do a job.
Yeah.
And the job is they're trying to steal some artifact from the top guy at the city place where Miriam is from.
The Circulum Infinitus.
Yes. Here's the thing, Chloe. You made the person who didn't play the games and doesn't know the lore do the plot summary. And I called Fairbanks Matt Mercer the whole time.
Okay, they were stealing from a magister of Tevinter. The Tevinter Imperium is very similar to perhaps ancient Rome or the Byzantine. It's like it's very like Byzantine in nature, and they're magocracy. Anyways, so they're going to steal from the Tevinter Imperium.
So I had a question about that.
Yes.
Are they kind of like, so they're very focused on mages, right?
Yes.
Mages are in power.
Yeah.
And there's a very, very strong hierarchy there.
Yes.
Gotcha. So it's a place that's driven by slavery, from what I understand.
They have a very strict case system where, like, the more powerful you are magically, the more power you have in their society. So, generally speaking, the head of their society, the divine, who's also the head of their church, as well as the head of their government, who's they're separate, but they tend to be very, very powerful mages. You can't get past a certain point without being a mage.
Gotcha. So they're the opposite of Demacia from League of Legends. For those who understand that reference, there's an ambulance.
There's an ambulance.
Basically her ex, Hira, comes back and offers her this job. And Miriam is very against it at first because that's where she was born and raised and she is an escaped slave in a sense.
Yep, not in a sense, she is.
Yeah, she is. And basically to go back there is very traumatic for her. But she eventually agrees. And so the party is gathered and there are six of them, right?
Yes.
And the six of them travel to that city to steal.
You just didn't mention half the party.
I'll get to it.
Well, you said the party's assembled and you haven't even mentioned half of them.
Well, I'm just doing the plot first and then we'll talk about characters. Because if I start talking about characters, then it's going to get loosey-goosey very quickly. You know me.
Okay.
They go to steal the artifact.
Yes.
On the other side, in that city, there's a secondary plot happening. And basically, it's the person who Miriam grew up with, her quote-unquote brother, who's actually the son of the woman who owned her, is now in charge of the city, or the council, or whatever it is that they have. I don't know the lore. He's like the main fella. And basically, he's trying to unlock the power of this artifact, which, according to him, it resurrects people without having to sacrifice another soul for it. And so they're both kind of after this artifact in different senses. And the entire show is about the struggle. The main party is doing the heist, whereas Miriam's not-brother-brother is trying to unlock the full potential of this artifact and is playing with dark arts. I feel like that's the plot. Chloe is trying real hard not to interrupt me. Well, that is the plot, right?
Yes.
And now we can talk about the characters and get into the spoilers and all the nitty-gritty details.
And all the lore. And enjoy it. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, first things first, Kimberly Brooks, who plays Miriam, great job.
Yes.
She reminds me of Catra. I let you know that, but like...
I can see it. Non-evil Catra.
The angst is there. She's small.
Do you know who she played in Mass Effect?
Was it Samantha?
Nope, Ashley.
She played Ashley?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, that's why she was familiar. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It makes sense once you hear it, right?
I'll have to re-listen.
Okay.
But the name looked very familiar and I was struggling.
I love Miriam as a character. So it is like a common trope to like connect it to other Dragon Ages of like the elf assassin. So apparently in kind of the culture of the Dragon Age universe, it's very common for elves to be trained as assassins because they are considered kind of, you know, beneath notice. So she's one of several that have appeared in throughout the kind of media. And I like the take on her. I like her... the story with her brother and with Rezarin, who was the guy in charge that you mentioned, the Tevinter
Magister.
Who looks
like Matt Mercer, but is not.
Yes, he looks like Matt Mercer, but is not voiced by Matt Mercer. Matt Mercer voices Fairbanks. I knew this was going to come up because I remember seeing him and thinking like, wow, he does look like Matt Mercer, but he's not Matt Mercer's voice.
Very much so, yeah. Which is kind of funny. Because Matt does have that, like, vibe about him when animated, where he's, I don't know, like, he never looks like the main character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's never the protagonist-looking guy
when animated. Well, because he's the DM. He's the antagonist always.
But I'm also talking just about, like, character design when they try to, when a character looks exactly like him.
Yeah.
It's always, like, either a side character or they're not necessarily good.
Yeah. Although it turns out the character that Matt Mercer plays, Fairbanks, is actually...
He's a great guy.
He's
a good
guy.
He loves his wife.
Yes. And he gets double-crossed by Hira.
Who is Sumali Montano, and she was on Critical Role, and she played a Furbolg, and she was great.
Okay. I feel like this was a bunch... Like, was this just, like, the Critical Role people, like, finished creating the Critical Role... TV show and then decided to like Oh, well, we knocked that one out. Let's also do Dragon Age while we're at it. Like,
I also think there's like 20 voice actors in America.
Okay, that's true. But like, it's interesting because Ashley Birch plays Quidian. And I know that she wasn't a voice on the Critical Role TV show, on the animated series. She was a writer on it, which is interesting.
She did take part in a couple of episodes with them. Also, like, her brother is heavily involved with D&D. Anthony Birch has a podcast and stuff. Like, I actually kind of like her as a writer.
I mean, Sirens, but...
yeah.
Jeez. Hope everyone's okay in your part of New York.
I live by a hospital.
I know, but yeah, I think we have to talk about Quidian last because I'm going to gush, but yeah. I love Ashley Birch in general. You know, she does, like, I feel like she's in almost every game at this point. Like, she's in
a very robust list of things she was in. I actually really like her performance here.
Yes.
Her performance as Chloe wasn't my favorite. I actually liked the voice actor for Before the Storm a little more for Chloe's character.
Oh man, that's like fighting words. There's some people on Reddit and Tumblr who would not be happy with that.
I don't care.
Well, I do care. Listeners, please send us your hot takes on Val's opinions.
But I really do like her here. She really, really felt like that character. Yeah, let's move on from her and then get back because... At first, I thought you just liked her because Ashley Birch, but then as the series went on and as I finished it up, I was like, oh, hell yeah, I think she is probably also my favorite.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Roland, who is a human warrior, and he's Miriam's friend before the mission, the elaborate heist.
Yes. He's a sarcastic boy. He is, he's very handsome and, like, suave.
Yes, he's, like, very swashbucklery.
Yeah, I would say he's like a fighter with a Klassenbard, or maybe just like a very high charisma fighter.
He reminds me, there's a character in Dragon Age 2 that he reminds me of, so that's all I'm going to say. Save that for another episode. And then we've got Lachlan, who's a dwarven fighter.
He's great. I love him.
You always need a curmudgeon. Like...
Yeah. She's like, we're going to die. Yeah. You do understand we're going to die. What are you doing? Let's just go home. We're fine. And they're like, no, we're in this together. And he's like,
yeah. He's like, he's like the personification of a sigh. Like, he's that friend who's always like there to like support you, but always seems like they don't want to be. That's totally Lachlan. Like,
he's like, please don't jump off the bridge. Please. He knows that you're going to jump off a bridge, so he ties the bungee really well.
And he's jumping right next to you.
Yeah, he's already tied in.
Okay.
Roland and Lachlan are great.
Yes.
Love them.
They kiss.
They
just kiss. Throwing that out there. They have a very beautiful kiss scene.
They are my OTP here. Yes. We're going to have a talk about Miriam and Hera.
Okay.
Tassia is awesome.
Tassia, so she is the Knight Commander of the Templars who guard the temple, and she personally guards Rezzarin as well, who's the Tevinter Magister.
She's, like, on the bad side, but she's, like, a very brave and valiant character.
And very, like, lawful. She's, like, the embodiment of lawfulness. Like, very much, like, I have to do things, those are my
orders.
She's
lawful good.
Yes.
She's also, like... I don't know.
She's super in love with Rezzarin, who does not reciprocate that.
He does.
Well,
in a way, like he can.
But he's in love with Miriam's brother.
I can see that. But also, once again, the same thing. He's in love with him as much as he can be.
Yeah. But he's like, trying to bring the brother back from the dead. Like, that's the whole
point. But I don't
know
if it's romantic or familial. I feel like
it's just like... The way he, like, touches the brother's body. So the body of the brother...
It's a little sexual, but...
It's very sexual.
But also, like, well, this is a spoiler for The Locked Tomb. Like, Eonthe is a little horny for her sister, right? Like, it's there.
Okay.
Here, it's a little different from that. Like, he has that in him, but also he's just, like, so incapable of understanding human emotions that it doesn't even, like, translate to that to me. he's an extremely possessive person.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And the way that he wants to possess Miriam is slightly different than the way he wants to possess her, Miriam's brother, Ned.
Yeah.
But like, it's also the same.
Yes.
And Tassia is definitely not in that bracket of people he wants to keep. However, they do have a very genuine relationship too. Like, especially in the beginning when it's just them.
Yeah, they're very at ease with each other.
Yeah, and they understand how they work, and they do work together, and they kind of, like, cooperate and challenge each other. And that's ultimately his downfall.
Yeah.
And the downfall of a lot of their people is because he doesn't respect Tassia's power, and she knows that he's not going to listen to her, so she has to lie to him to keep him from doing things she doesn't want him to do.
Yeah.
So it's very contentious as well. So it's like a very not great relationship, and that's what makes it a really great relationship for a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, I really like those. I also want Tassia to just, like, get a good boy. She deserves him.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So this kind of leads in, because I wanted to talk about Rezzurin's heel turn, which I feel like, okay, so they're like 27-minute episodes, and there's six of them, so it's very...
Yeah, this is an extremely quick TV show to get through.
And as a result, Rezzurin's heel turn is so... Like, his descent into madness happens so quickly. I think that's the biggest weakness, if I had to say there's, like, a big weakness here. It's just that, like, they don't have enough time to show him kind of, like, this descent into madness happening in, like, a natural way.
Or just even to unravel the way that he always is like that.
Yes.
Because we get most of that, I think, in the last two episodes.
It feels like it goes, like, it's a very breathless show in general. Like, it's supposed to be just this heist that's happening over the course of maybe, like, 24 hours, I guess. But it mm-hmm. feels like he goes from, like, I'm this calm and collected magister who's going to unlock the puzzle of this artifact. And then half an hour later, he's like, I am cray cray, and I'm going to use the artifact to stop death entirely, and I will take over the world. And Miriam, you will be by my side as my assassin in chief, and your brother and I and you will all live together and be rulers of the world. And it's just like, it was like too much, like too fast for him to go from like, I'm going to bring your brother back to like, and we're going to conquer the world.
So I think we had a similar issue with Critical Role.
Yes.
Like the TV show. It's much longer. I think it's double the length of this one. But it's still like, wasn't it? It was 12 episodes?
10 or 12. Let me check.
Yeah. Regardless, it was longer, but it still felt like this. And because this is a show that is written about a video game that is so massive, that has so many, like, intricacies in it, and just, like, as you said, these are games that you need to play hundreds of hours, right? Yep. And they're trying to fit that in into, like, less than 3 hours. I think it's, like, 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And that's difficult. And I feel like probably you enjoyed this show much more than I ever could have, because you notice, like, the little things. For example, I didn't know the thing about elf assassins, but now that you mention it, they did, like, explore that part of Miriam in a very technical term, in a way that, like, if I was a player who was familiar with that, I would have been super excited to see that.
Oh, yeah. There were so many references. Like, I mean, everything from Hera being a former member of the Inquisition to the Lyrium potions and healing potions, the spells that they cast Hera and Quidian are all spells from the games, the demons that appear, all from the games, the dragon and its abilities and how it acts, very similar to the games. It's just everything about, and the fact that Quidian is a Qunari and she mentions that she's a rebel. Again, all this stuff, just all of it ties into the game. And then the final like twist where we see, well, you know, spoilers as always, but we see that Knight Commander Meredith of Kirkwall. First of all, we see Kirkwall at the end. That was the place with the awful giant statues of the slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's like the famous bit of architecture when you arrive at Kirkwall. But Scene Meredith.
Played by Jean Gilpin.
Yes. Who was the final antagonist of the second game, kind of. The second game didn't really have an antagonist necessarily, like a main antagonist, but she was one of the antagonists. She was the she was the final boss, but she was not the main antagonist of the game, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. But seeing her still alive and that she's become basically purely Red Lyrium is like a big deal if you know the lore of the games. But if you don't, it makes no sense. Like what like
yeah,
what does Lyrium even do? What does Red Lyrium do? You would have no idea without playing Inquisition.
No idea. I know that they talked about it in the beginning.
Yep.
Is that what she is? Is she like stuck in it?
It's hard to say from what we saw. It looks it looks like she's become Red Lyrium or like merged with it in some way.
Cause so she's like a GLaDOS.
Yeah, it's we don't really know. So Red Lyrium in the Dragon Age 2, basically we learn that it can corrupt people's thoughts, but also give them like powers.
They become gay?
anyway. I don't know. It's not but... pink kryptonite from Superman or whatever is the one that makes him gay.
Corrupting thoughts and powers,
I guess.
But yeah, you see, like, there's a lot of these little things that, like, as a person who plays video games, I'm like, oh, that's probably a thing.
Oh, yeah, and Quiddian mentions the blight. You maybe remember
Blight.
Okay, you know the blight. So, like, there's all this other stuff. Yeah.
That was so funny.
Yeah.
She talks about the blight, and then, like, she's so passionate about not having, like, to protect her master from it.
Her master's bad knee is acting up, and the last time it did that was when the blight started.
That the shopkeep, like, sold her his, like, secret weapons.
Yeah, it was a very
hilarious
good scene.
Let's see, who else is there? I think we talked pretty much about everyone. Like, yeah. There is Rizarin's mom, but I don't care about her. She's a...
she's not even really a character. She's just kind of a...
Yeah, she's like a shadow.
Plot device. Yeah.
I think that's all of them.
So there's kind of the main eight of the show, and the whole story is kind of revolving around them. So let's start talking about some relationships. And I think we got to start with Miriam and Hera, since they're the first relationship that's kind of introduced. They like kiss, and we learn that they were together for a while, but Miriam ran away, and Hera joined the Inquisition, and they've been separated, and now they're back together. And then, go ahead.
Hera didn't really leave an impression on me
as
a character. They could have done a little more with her. I don't know. She was just like, maybe that was the point, but like, I didn't care about her, which was a little upsetting because, you know, like my favorite character is kind of like a character that's a little bit like this. But just like something about her lack of loyalty to a thing really made her inconsequential to me personally. So I didn't care that much about their relationship. Like, I don't know.
I mean, the whole, I guess, point of it is that she really stabs Miriam in the back and uses their relationship to her advantage in the end and steals the artifact from Miriam.
Yes, but usually I would go feral for that, you know?
Yeah.
But there's something about her character that didn't quite hit the spot right. And I think it was the fact that they didn't go full unhinged with her.
Yeah.
They kind of like only halfway it. That's a word. Sure. Let's go with that. In the end, she did like the way that they framed her in scene was a little bit like how they would frame a madman. But she wasn't quite there enough for it. In the very end, when she teleports away and Miriam thinks that she's speaking to her, but it's an illusion and she's behind her. Like, it didn't feel that powerful to me because I wasn't that invested in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, like, when they first started the journey, when she's talking Miriam into it, she's very, like, gaslighty.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of it is her keeping information from Miriam.
Yeah.
But in a way that's frustrating and doesn't necessarily pay off. It's just like conflict for conflict's sake. For example, Rizarin and Tassia, when they are trying to do a thing and are both interfering with each other's plans, and therefore the coordination is not there, and it kind of like, that's why they lose. That's interesting, right? Because we know both of them are going to do the thing they want to do, but they have to, like, contend with the other, and they have to figure out a way to go around them.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. Whereas with Miriam and Hira, it was just kind of frustrating because they're never together. Like, I don't think they had the same chemistry. They didn't get the moment they need.
No.
It's always them interacting with each other with the party.
Yes.
The most frustrating of those moments was when Miriam figured out a way to get into the palace, and it was just her and Hira, and Hira immediately calls Fairbanks.
Right.
And, like, that could have been the moment.
Yeah. But Hira doesn't care. That's the point.
Yes, but, like, I know, but as a writer, like, that wasn't the way to show it.
Yeah.
You know, like, they could have done a little bit more work on that, and it doesn't need to be a long scene or anything. I just needed to be invested in their relationship. And I really wasn't, because the entire time is just Hira asking Miriam to go to a place where her entire family got killed. She was enslaved for most of her life. And then, like, in the end, we find out that's where her brother died. Like, yeah. That's where she watched her brother get killed and then had to finish him off. Like, just that feeling of her being so, like, she was afraid to go back.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there was aggression in the way that she rejected the plan at first, but that was, like, fearful aggression.
Yeah.
And then Hira was just kind of, like, very zen about it and, like, pushy, and that didn't work. There could have been more.
I agree.
Yeah.
This is another thing where I think it might be a victim of, like, the short time.
But it absolutely is.
Yeah. They could have had a bit more there. And, okay.
What did work, Roland, was Fairbanks betraying Hira.
Yes.
Because in the moment, I was, like, both aware that that's... I thought that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But the twist to it, that he's actually loyal to his crew...
Yeah.
Like, that was super interesting afterwards, you know? And the fact that he's, like, super loyal to his crew and was actually protecting them... Yeah. That's so interesting. Because when he was betraying her, it didn't feel entirely correct. You know what I mean? Like, there was something there that was, like, a little weird.
Yeah.
And it was the way that he, like, died, I think, maybe. But something about the way they framed it, it just, like, it felt off, but not enough for me to notice it until we find out the actual betrayal.
And see, the interesting thing, again, this is another one of those things, that Fairbanks was a character from Inquisition.
Oh, he was?
Yes.
Who's his wife?
I don't know that it's established.
So that's the joke? He just keeps talking about his wife?
Yeah, it might be one of the other refugees. Kind of like that
more than knowing who,
so,
who,
like,
she is.
So in Inquisition, he's leading this group of refugees, and you learn that he's actually a nobleman of a land called Orlais, aka Fantasy France. And you can, you know, you can either conceal his noble heritage, or you can help him prove that he's a noble, and then he can use that to, like, aid the Inquisition. So it's like, it's a very, it's a side quest. It's a very small quest that you could very easily miss. And he's a very minor character in it. Yeah. So it's interesting because I think if you've played Inquisition, you know that he's a good guy in that, and so the fact that he is betraying Hira probably means Hira's up to something.
Gotcha. So you see, that's interesting. Like, there is more to their relationship than there is to Miriam's and Hira's, in my opinion.
Yes.
And I did go to Fairbanks' wiki page, and it does say he has an unnamed wife, yeah. Which is hilarious.
But if I remember correctly, there was one of the... Yeah, it says here on the wiki, Clara was one of the other refugees. I wonder if... No, she was too old. Unless he likes older women. I suppose it's possible. I don't know. It could be... Anyways, regardless.
So basically, I feel like every other relationship in the show had more substance to it than Hira and Miriam, which is a little unfortunate. I would have loved to see, like, a betrayal that really felt like... That impacted
the dagger
me in some way.
In the back. Like, we really needed the twisted dagger in the heart type situation. We got a dagger in the back, but it didn't make it past the rib cage. It was pretty, was a surface.
It was a flesh wound.
Yes.
Tis but a scratch.
Okay. Roland and Lachlan.
Yes, the boys.
The will they or won't they of the show.
The will they or when will they?
Yes, that's a good way to play it. Roland is so flirty with Lachlan, and Lachlan seems mostly oblivious. Or is he?
He seems mostly in denial. Yeah. And he's like, this guy is gonna die. He's gonna eat it so fast. And then Roland just keeps surviving.
Yeah.
Roland is off the cuff, just like, don't have a girlfriend. I'm single.
Yeah.
When are you going to ask me out? I'm right here. Hello.
Yeah.
And Lachlan is like, I'm getting paid for this and then I'm going home.
Yeah.
He's also whipped.
Yeah.
Like, he blushes profusely in like one of the earlier episodes. And that's when I fell in love with that character.
Yeah. Lachlan pretty much, it's so funny because he's like, he just goes along with anything Roland asks him to do, anything. He's so just ready to go.
Yeah.
He's ride or die.
And Roland keeps saving him.
Yeah.
And it's adorable. And their relationship is like really cool because the dynamic is like, Lachlan really doesn't want to give in to this. Yeah. He doesn't want to become a part of this crew. He just is like, this is the mission. We get paid, I go home.
Yeah.
But like, because he actually is so very invested and he does want a boyfriend out of it, he's always the one that approaches Roland, I feel like.
Yeah, doesn't he initiate the kiss?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's him, and that's because he's like, we're gonna die anyway, so I might as well just do this.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Much to Quidian's surprise.
That her face... She should have known.
I mean, she made that thing, she made that comment to Lachlan at one point, if like, about Roland, right? Like, if you don't go for him, I will.
Yes. And I think she says something similar about another character as well. She gives very like Ace vibes.
Yeah. Like, I think she's content to be kind of the matchmaker, and like, she likes seeing helping other people get together is like the impression I get.
Yes, she's very kind-hearted, and I feel like she, like, is down for a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, sexual.
Yeah. So, since we're talking about Quidian,
yes,
we need to talk about
way
Quidian.
Way too. So, way too.
She rules. Segway. She's so cool.
She's excellent.
I love her to death. So she's a Qunari mage, so you probably don't know too much about the Qunari. There was one in Origins, but...
Mm-hmm. He was a tall boy. He didn't talk much.
And he didn't have horns because I think there were graphical limitations, but they usually look more like Quidian. Anyway, so the Qunari are like a very strict religious society, and Quidian is a rebel, and because mages in the Qunari society are basically chained and imprisoned. But anyway, Quidian is everything that any other, pretty much, well, she reminds me a lot, okay. An Inquisition.
She's the protagonist, I would say.
Yes.
She would be the character you play in the game.
Yes. And she reminds me a lot of Iron Bull from Dragon Age Inquisition in that he's just a very larger-than-life character.
He's just, and just a nice fellow.
Yeah, he's just a good guy. Side note, in Dragon Age Inquisition, Iron Bull is voiced by Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh my god, I was literally just thinking of the guy from Mass Effect.
Vega.
Yeah, because he reminded me of him.
Yeah.
Whoa, cool.
It all comes together.
Goes a full circle, just yes. Like the amulet.
So Quidian, just every scene with her where she like does something is just so good. And she's so, I don't know, she's the kindest character. And I feel like she's the glue that holds this whole group together. Because like when Miriam comes up with her wild plan to break back into the temple and save Hira, Quidian is the
Quidian
one.
Quidian is so excited about it. She's like, yes, that's exactly what I wanted you to decide and what we want to do. She reminds me of Keyleth.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great comparison. She's got Keyleth energy for sure.
Mm-hmm. And like, what I like about her is she spent most of the show alone running.
Yep.
But also being so like competent.
Yes.
I know that they're all sort of competent, but she's the one who's competent and succeeds consistently.
Yes.
And, like, she saves a lot of people.
Yep.
Her kindness really makes everyone in the end kind of survive, too.
Yep.
So without her, none of this would have happened. They would all be dead 10 times over.
Yep.
And, like, I love when shows do that. When there's just, like, a kind character and they're not ignored or, like, shoved to the background as, like, this naive fool.
Yep.
Right, like, they're not just preaching, like, no, we have to do the right thing, and then, like, obviously they can't. Here, it's very much what saves them in the end, because she releases the dragon, so the dragon doesn't kill them. And so then the scene where she's like, where they say that they thought she died when she freed the dragon.
Yeah.
And they show what actually happened. Like, that's so funny.
Yep. And it's literally my avatar on Discord right now. So, as her talking about freeing the dragon.
Oh, that's the scene?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. There's other stuff, like, she heals the dragon. She didn't, you know, like, if it were a real Dragon Age game, you would kill it and take the loot. So, shout out to her for healing the dragon.
Yes, that was so cool.
Yeah.
I really like that move.
I like when she hugs Miriam.
Yes, that lady needs a hug.
And
she needs a long, long hug. And she's a big lady, so that's a good hug.
Yeah, I like that her size is brought up a lot as, like, kind of a humorous thing. Like, she saves all those elves, and they start calling her giantess.
Giantess. Yes. She's like, that's a little offensive.
Yeah.
But also, the elves are much shorter than the average human.
Yes.
So the fact that, like... Which, speaking of, was my favorite thing about Hera. She's so short. She is Miriam's height.
Yeah.
She had everything going for her. Why wasn't she more evil or more cool?
I don't know. I think she needed more time. They just need more Hera time.
They did. I hope they get a second season. And I hope they give that Hera time.
It's interesting.
Because it was neither Hera nor Thera.
Oh my god. I was trying to think whether this was setting up for the next game or whether it's setting up for season two. But I think it's setting up for a season two, because you have this very established cast of characters. Unless they're planning for, like, all of them to be party members, but they have such a pre-established history. Mm-hmm. I don't think
that'd be weird.
Yeah, that'd be weird to just have your character join this cast that's already... It's weird.
Yeah, so whatever they did, it was more like a side quest than, yeah, like a main plot story, so yeah.
It looks like they're setting up for something. Yeah, and especially because the subtitle of the fourth game is Dreadwolf, which has very little to do with what was happening here, is all I'll say, based on who the Dreadwolf is.
Yeah, what Chloe just said. Yeah. I understand that.
Listen, do you have time to hear about
it? It is great that you're geeking out.
I'm going to tell you
we're going to have good context
about elven history, elven lore. So the elves used to be immortal. So they used to be like classic, you know, D&D Tolkien elves. But then the story goes that they lived in these great golden cities. And their gods lived amongst them. And then at some point, there was some kind of cataclysm, some kind of falling out. And the elves lost their immortality. And some of their gods disappeared. And one of their gods, though, was the Dreadwolf. I think it's Fenrael is their elvish name, because I friggin' remember their name.
Royal Fenrir.
And the Dreadwolf is otherwise known as the Slow Arrow. They're kind of a god of, I want to say, like, not quite vengeance, but of, like, long...
Pettiness.
No, like, long-term justice.
Oh, okay.
So they're really about the long game. Hold on, I'm going to look this up to make sure I'm not just, like, totally...
You can make it up.
I want to be right.
be right.
Fenrir.
2022.
Hey. Yeah, okay. And it was his betrayal of the gods that maybe cost elves their immortality.
All right. Well, that's just petty then.
Yeah.
So is this like a sort of scenario that's similar to like D&D 5e, where it's past the age of like the high magic and is more of like them recovering from the apocalypse?
Yeah, basically the world was once a much better, safer place, and then there was kind there were several moments of corruption, the fall of the elven, you know, like paradise, and then the start of the blights, which might have been caused by a bunch of Tevinter magisters who tried to break into the equivalent of fantasy heaven.
Gotcha. So people like I can't say that.
I'm trying to explain like how it was without being sacrilegious, but basically they tried to see if God exists by breaking into heaven, but by breaking into heaven they corrupted heaven and created basically corrupted heaven and turned it into hell.
Gotcha.
or so that, but it might be an allegory. So it's like, how literal is it? Who knows? Like, that's mm-hmm. part of the story is like, you don't really know how literal that is. Anyways.
Yeah.
The important part of this is that
it's a recovering country that's still amidst, many countries. Like, crumble. I meant to say continent.
Continent.
I'm very tired.
It's very based on, I want to say, like, 8th and 9th century Europe and their relationships with the Mediterranean and the kind of the rising Muslim gotcha. Muslim kingdoms, which all are right. represented by mm-hmm. the Canary, and then Tevinter kind of represents the Byzantine Empire, and then you've got like Orlais, which is fantasy France, and then Ferelden, which is fantasy England, and you know, so you've got this whole metaphor that's there of this mm-hmm. kind of like post-Roman kind of conflict that's kind of gotcha. Ongoing is like uh-huh. the main inspiration for what's going on in Dragon Age. Anyway,
I like that.
That was super nerdy thing to end on. Any final thoughts on Absolution? Would you recommend it to someone who is not,
yes.
does not know Dragon Age?
Yes, I would. Okay. I enjoyed it a lot. I actually was messaging Chloe about it
yeah.
and then switched over to a different chat, forgot I did that, and kept messaging Chloe about it. And everyone was a little bit confused because I just texted, "The boys kissed," and then nothing.
I send that text every night, personally, just to everyone I know. The boys kissed.
Which is why they were confused that it came from me.
Yeah, yeah, usually it comes from me.
But yes, first of all, the animation is pretty.
Yeah.
The characters are great, the dynamic is fun.
There's a lot of gayness. The plot is,
it could be better, but it's 2.5 hours, so it's not a long show.
Yeah.
Didn't have time, I guess, but it's good. I would give it a solid, like, 7.5 out of 10.
Oh, no. Are we rating things now? Is that a thing this show is going to do?
We will wing it. We'll mix it up. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
This one, I just...
Like we do everything else in life.
We're very prepared people, Chloe.
Yes.
These are scheduled weeks ahead of time.
Yes. It is definitely not. Like 3 days before this episode is going to be released.
We didn't decide to record it today, yesterday.
Yes. So thank you all so much for tuning in. I just want to mention our social media. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. Our Tumblr is the podinmedialez.tumblr.com.
You took it from me? Wow.
I don't need your help anymore because I use Tumblr now.
Betrayal.
Our website is
immediately. A worse betrayal than Hera stabbing Miriam in the back.
Our website is inmedialez.com. You can email us at inmedialez@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who interacts with us in any way, shape, or form. We love you.
Thank you for getting through the last episode.
What?
The last episode we had was rough.
I don't think it was that rough.
Rude. I forgot to say it wasn't gay.
Okay.
It was a little rough.
But enough about
dogs. But anyway,
about dogs.
Thank you for listening to this much better episode.
Thank you for tuning in.
And we'll see you in the next one.
And the maker bless you.
I'm an atheist.